KBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. President Biden and President Xi Jinping ending their meeting, White House saying they've made agreements that include reestablishing military communications and fighting illegal fentanyl. Israeli Defense Forces taking control of several buildings in the Al-Shifa hospital complex in Gaza, where Israel says Hamas has hidden a command center and military equipment.
In the surrounding area, there's hundreds of tunnel shafts that we've already found. Now, this takes time to find them, and that's where we're now looking, and we're continuously looking inside the hospital and also in its vicinity.
Israeli Defense Forces spokesperson Lieutenant Amnon Scheffler. National Transportation Safety Board investigation into the fatal I-70 crash yesterday that left 6 dead, now underway in Ohio.
This investigation may take us between 12 and 18 months, but at any time in that period, we could issue urgent safety recommendations.
Chair Jennifer Homendy says they'll look at the electronic data recorders and video. This is ABC News. Parts of north central Illinois rattled by a 3.6 magnitude earthquake this morning. It was centered about 100 miles south of Chicago. Browns quarterback Deshaun Watson will miss the rest of the season after fracturing his right shoulder in Sunday's win over Baltimore.
We feel good about Deshaun. We see how talented he is. We could see it, you know, since he returned from his last injury, the level that he is able to play. He's smart. He's physically tough. He's mentally tough. He really is, as Kevin's mentioned, he's the leader of the team.
General Manager Andrew Berry says Watson's expected back next season. Cases of tuberculosis in the U.S. have risen by nearly 6% between 2021 and 22. That's according to the CDC, which says 4 states account for half of all reported tuberculosis cases: California, Texas, New York, and Florida. Jimmy Kimmel once again tapped to host the Oscars. Andy Field, ABC News.
Are record energy costs putting a squeeze on your fixed or limited incomes? With inflation rising at record levels and incomes not keeping pace, you might be one of tens of thousands of Wisconsin residents who are struggling to survive in the blistering heat of summer or the bitter cold of winter. While you haven't asked for it, the Keep Wisconsin Warm Cool Fund and your local energy assistance providers are here to help. No Wisconsin resident should ever have to face the challenge of living without heat or power or face homelessness. For a hand up, apply today and call 1-800-506-5596 or visit www.kwwf.org. That's 800-506-5596. Or visit www.kwwf.org.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Her name is Pam Yonke, but you can just call the host of the Midwest Farm Report, the Fabulous Farm Babe.
That's right, and the Fabulous Farm Babe is now part of the Civic Media team on your local station, WGBW 1590 AM 97.9 FM in Green Bay. Here's show host Todd Alba with the announcement.
She is a broadcast legend. Doesn't matter whether you're a farm person, ag person, a producer, or just a good old Wisconsinite or a Packer fan. Pam Yonke, welcome to Civic Media.
My pleasure. Yeah, lifelong Wisconsinite. I grew up on a small dairy farm in northeast Wisconsin, O'Connell County. Stop and think about the work being done 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to make sure that you and I are the best fed in the world.
Join the Fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke on WGBW 1590 AM 97.9 FM in Green Bay.
Your Midwest Farm Report, weekdays from 5 until 6 a.m.
Face the Raptors. They lost in Toronto by a score of 130-111. Before tonight's game, we learned that Giannis Antetokounmpo would not play due to a sore calf muscle. No word yet on how serious that injury is. Baseball, a press conference at American Family Field has been called for tomorrow morning to announce that Pat Murphy is the new manager of the Brewers. Murphy's been with the crew since 2016 as the team's bench coach, and former Brewers infielder Ricky Weeks being named associate manager. NFL, Packers back at practice. They host the Chargers Sunday. Jordan Love on finally scoring some points in the first half against Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I think last week, just starting the game fast and being able to put up points early was a huge step, something we've been, you know, harping on and focusing on, which I think that'll definitely carry over to be able to continue that. And then, yeah, I think just continue to finish those games.
That's Packers quarterback Jordan Love with Sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Here's your updated forecast. Mainly clear sky tonight with lows around 34. Southerly winds, 5 to 10 miles an hour. Daytime highs approaching 64. Tomorrow, a blend of clouds and sun. Overcast skies. Tomorrow night, chance for scattered showers, 37. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 37.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. It's your hometown radio, refreshed. From I-43 to I-41, this is the Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM, WGBW.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, President Biden and Xi Jinping had their powwow today, and the president tweeted out, "I've just concluded a day of meetings with President Xi, and I believe they were some of the most constructive and productive discussions we've had. We've built on ground laid over the past several months of diplomacy between our countries and made important progress." And look, you know, as we've been talking about for months now, China's becoming much more aggressive, much more muscular, attempting to do some things they haven't in a while. But you knew eventually they were going to feel their oats a little bit, and you know they're going to try and take Taiwan at some point. And the question is how is this moment really? How important is this moment? And who would you rather have in this negotiations? Would you want someone like Trump, who it's all about the art of the deal? And if you remember the deal was we're going to give China basically what they want. We'll slap some tariffs on them and they'll promise to buy some stuff from us. They never did buy the stuff. Biden, to his credit, kept the tariffs, but it didn't slow China's move, because China has done the same thing to every president. You know, basically tell you what you want to hear and then go about doing whatever it is they want to do. Now, understand, China's in a rough spot right now because their economy is not doing great. They've got some real problems. I had someone the other day, and this is one of those things that they told me that China released the virus to destroy, it was this big conspiracy. And I said, well, you know, I don't know about that, because China's the one who's been hit hardest by it. They're the ones whose economy is reeling. In fact, it was just reported, I think today, yesterday, that the fact that we're remanufacturing, we're bringing jobs back, and that we're actually looking at domestic consumption for domestic production. China's economy has slipped to, I think the number was like 64% of the size of the U.S. economy. Now, remember, we were almost right there. In fact, China was about to overtake us. They were the manufacturer of the world. And now the U.S. economy is outpacing China's economy. And the question is, do we return to the neoliberal ideals of, you know, open borders and let's just start dumping things? Because yesterday we talked with Scott Paul, the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, and I got a number of email responses from people, you know, talking about Chinese EVs. And interestingly enough, the vast majority of people who emailed us were on the side of, no, we can't continue the kind of open border free trade that allows a country like China to dump things into this country and undercut U.S. labor and undercut prices temporarily. Because again, what they've done masterfully over the years in a very mercantilist way is they've come in, they've undercut or they've bought up all the competition, and now the prices are rising and the profits. And this is where you go, will we continue the momentum? Because it was my view, you know, when Trump was talking about this, you go back to, you know, 2015, 2016, he took his office in 2017. I said at the beginning, if he did a couple of things, he'd be unbeatable in 2020. Had he invested in infrastructure, like he said he was going to, he was talking like $3 trillion. Biden got 1.25, historic, but still not close to the 3 trillion and not close to the 4.8 trillion that we actually need. Had he done that, had he done the infrastructure, and had he taken on China and begun what he said he was going to do, and that's bring back those factories, you know, make Lordstown, Ohio whole, you know, make Ottumwa, Iowa whole, you know, all the places that we went on our working class heroes tour, go into those places and bring manufacturing jobs back. Had he done that, he'd have been unbeatable. And interestingly enough, the guy who's doing those things is Joe Biden, and not getting any credit for it. This is the part that's really quite remarkable, that not getting the credit that he's earned by passing this legislation with very tight Democratic margins and very little, if any, help from Republicans. There was a little help on the bipartisan infrastructure bill, not a lot. Let's not get crazy. But the fact that our economy has been fairly resilient, the fact that everything the Fed is trying to do to kill it, and everything that the Republican Party is trying to do to kill it, still, we've been moving in a positive direction. Imagine if everyone were on the same page. And I think, you know, with China, I think that has to be part of this. So as the president's meeting with President Xi, this is where we stop the, if he's for it, I've got to be against it kind of thinking. Maybe we don't. At least that's where my mind has been, because, you know, for so long we've given in to China because, you know, corporate America wanted to. And look, there's still some companies that are hanging on to the hopes that they're going to be able to maintain their massive profit margins off the backs of American workers and slave labor in China. I know they are. But this is where it comes back to us and our elected leaders and the people that we put into the halls of power to stop this kind of stuff. Again, back to that representative democracy stuff that we like to believe in. I don't know what's going to come out of this meeting. The hope is that Biden, you know, does what needs to be done to keep us on the path that he's set us on. And I keep coming back to this is another one of those moments where I'm happy that he's there and not the other guy. But there's much more that we need to be doing. I don't think we're doing enough fast enough on reshoring manufacturing. I don't think we're doing enough fast enough to position ourselves for what is eventually coming. And look, you know, the fact that, you know, Ukraine and Russia are still an issue. You know, this directly relates, in my view, to China. Now, look, I'm not a foreign policy expert by any stretch of the imagination, but I do get that if you allow Putin to be emboldened and you allow him to steamroll over Ukraine, the message that is sent to China is like, well, you know, the U.S. doesn't have any resolve. They're not going to stick by people. So, hey, Taiwan, here we come. And you go, well, why do we care about Taiwan? Well, you know, to have almost a democracy like that, that close to Beijing, that close to China, that's a positive. And look, we still need their manufactured goods. We still need their chips for the short term until we start building more of our own capacity. Which, you know, I got to tell you, I'm still amazed that the smart people who run this country thought it was a good idea to offshore that kind of technology. It makes you wonder. I know the smart people, they know what to do. Screw over working people. So, but when I saw this, it's one of those things that made me think that, you know, the president's in a position of strength. Our economy is doing better than China's is doing. China is dependent on the U.S. On the U.S. market to dump its stuff, because, you know, like what I was saying, there are all these EVs. I guess there's like a couple million that they could just, you know, just start shipping over here, and they would sell, you know, for virtually nothing. Surprisingly, only got a handful of people who are saying, look, you know, the if there's this capacity, we should be able to take advantage of that, and to be cheaper prices, we'd get you know, to this goal down the road faster. And I'm going, no, we wouldn't. What we would end up doing is we would end up killing our own growing EV market. We'd end up killing manufacturers here. And haven't we learned that lesson? Haven't we learned the lesson of going, no, let China, the cheapest labor and the most lax environmental regulations, let them do it. I mean, stop and think about it. The whole reason that, partially the reason we're going to EVs is because it's better for the environment. Imagine having it done in the worst environmental conditions with slave labor. I kind of think it sends the wrong message. Just a little bit. Maybe it's just me. I'm not 100% sure, but it's just one of those things. Now I'm hopeful. Hope some positive comes out of this. I don't think there will be. I think there'll be a lot of pomp and circumstances. There'll be photos. There'll be smiling faces. But ultimately, you know, nothing is going to change until we're the change. And that means don't buy stuff from China. Especially not Temu and the other direct from China apps. Just my thought. Want to hear yours? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I got a lot more to get to after this. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcast, you'll grab ours. Right back, stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I just got word from my friends over at Mack Truck that they have ratified their agreement. You may remember the union negotiated agreement. They had a tentative agreement early in October, and the membership said, no, get back to the table, negotiate something better. Well, I believe from what I'm hearing, they got something better. And the membership has approved it. So that's a good thing for the workers at Mack. Good on them. And again, this goes to show what worker power brings us. And look, we've been seeing a lot of strikes that have gone on. And look, as I've been saying for a long time, strikes work. Strikes work well. Because look, we saw the New York City nurses went on strike. They got a nice bump in their contract. You got the Screen Actor Guild, the Writers Guild, the Screen Actors, the Writers Guild. They got decent contracts. Dealt with their main issues. I mean, because look, what'd you have? Almost 12,000 writers on strike. Some 150,000 actors on strike. That's pretty remarkable. The UPS threat of a strike brought historic gains in wages, hours, conditions. The UAW strike, 150,000 workers. are in the process of ratifying their contract. Now there's some rumbling from what I've heard. I think it's at Ford where it might, who knows? We will see. Kaiser Permanente had a strike. It got an incredible, incredible contract out of that. Some 75,000 people on strike. You had the threat of the strike in Las Vegas by the hotel and restaurant workers that saw, you know, incredible gains. You know, the reality, strikes work. When working people stick together, strikes work. And this is where, that's the message. It's that simple. I think I read a statistic that said that, you know, the strikes this year are like nearly 1,000% increase over the last 2 years. And this stuff's contagious, and corporate America's got to start worrying at some point, because, and I think it's the reason that UPS ultimately settled, because they didn't want to get into a strike scenario. But I'm hoping that employers start to realize that, look, you know, they've had it good for a long time. They have. It's time to now share the wealth. It's time to now, because everybody I talk to, you know, people who reach out to me and share their stories, and I appreciate folks sharing their intimate stories with us. It's all about, you know, hey, you know, 30 years ago, I was making a better living. Was making more money 20, 30 years ago. Our benefits were better. Our healthcare was better. Our pensions were better. You know, all of this stuff. And people are struggling, especially as the new technologies have popped on. You know, all this gig work. And what's interesting to me is I find that people think, you know, gig work is some new creation. That, you know, well, this is some newfangled thing because it's technology. The apps, you know, help you be an Uber driver or Lyft or deliver food or whatever. None of this stuff is new. This is how work has been, you know, in horrible times for hundreds of years. You know, I was explaining to someone, you know, not too long ago that, you know, the Teamsters started out as, you know, representing independent contractors. You know, they were all gig workers. They worked, you know, on the horses, with the horses and the buggies. But they didn't work for an employer. They were their own bosses, but they leased the horses and they leased the buggies. And it's no different today than the trucks or the, you know, the technology or any of that. It's the same stuff, only different. You know, it's that saying, you know, more things change, the more they stay the same. For working people, it's exactly the same. Which is why we need to have labor law reform, which is why we need to have people in Congress, in the White House, in state houses across this country who care about workers' rights and care about ensuring that workers get a fair shake. Why you need to have unions who bring people together so that they can effect some change. And that's where these strikes, again, these strikes work. And I'm hoping there's a point where we don't have to do this anymore. I'm hoping there's a point of just, you know, the threat of, well, they might go on strike. That's bad for everybody. How about we don't? Because I don't know how much money the studios lost when the actors were on and the writers were on strike. I'm not sure how much that is. Somebody will probably send me the amount, and it'll be mind blowing. You know, I go back to that strike. There was a strike. I think it was up in Buffalo. Or was it Massachusetts? It's a slip off the top of my head, but they were on strike for, you know, a couple of months, and the hospital spent like $10 million to fight the strike and starve the workers out when they could have spent $5 million and given the workers everything they wanted. And this is where I keep coming back to. As a community, we have to support striking workers, which is why I keep talking about adopting a striker. When there's a strike near you, get out there on the picket line with them. Throw a couple of bucks into the strike fund. You know, bring some water or pizza, beer, whatever. But participate. because their advancement ultimately trickles to you. That is something that does trickle down. And I've told the story numerous times of, you know, when I used to be on the negotiating committee, you'd have supervisors for the company go, hey, you know, go in there and get as much as you can, because they knew that their raise was predicated on what we won at the bargaining table. Now, they weren't union members, but they benefited from us doing well. And well, why would you ask? Why would you say that would happen? Well, because, look, at the end of the day, you still need people on that side of the fence, too. And if you're not paying them at least as well as the people that they're in charge of, there's tension there. And you get people jumping ship. And they can't have that. So I look at this and I've got hope that maybe with these big strikes and with the victories that have come out of it and the solidarity that's been shown, maybe we don't have to have them. Maybe both sides sit down and actually come to an agreement. Because that's the perfect place. When people negotiate in good faith, that's where you want to be. When the pendulum swings too far to either side, and look, I don't want labor to have all of the power either, because that's not good either. Right now, the pendulum is too far to the side of the employer class, and the workers have been taking it on the chin. It needs to come back somewhere near the middle. And these strikes, I believe, are part of what's going to bring that back. When you look at the facts that, and we see these reports pop up every once in a while. You know, 40% of the people can't afford a $400 emergency. It's like 65% of people can't afford a $1,000 emergency. And why is that? Why do so few people have money saved for retirement when most people have access to a 401k? Why is it that they don't have the ability to put money aside? Well, I'd argue a big part of that is they don't make the wages. What the right will tell you is, well, they're just don't prioritize. No, you prioritize savings over your kids eating. Those are your two choices. Kids are going to eat. And I was talking about this with my producer today. And, you know, we were talking about, because we're about the same age. And, you know, talking about being, you know, like an 18, 20-year-old now and trying to make it and start out like we did. And, you know, it's easy to look at the younger generation. Oh, you got the world by the short hairs. And the reality is they don't. Saddled with massive debts, jobs that don't pay, no benefits, no future. And then we wonder why people don't want to work in those conditions. You know, I go back to myself. When I started working, you know, I started working for $3.35 an hour, you know, as a kid, you know, with my first job. And then you worked your way up until I got a union job that, you know, paid really well with health care, with retirement, you know, with a defined benefit pension, which most people don't even think ever existed. It's kind of like one of the, no, that never happened. And you go, yeah, it does. And it's something we can and should be fighting for. But again, I go back to the power has swung so far out of the hands of we, the working people, into the hands of the people who sit in the corner offices that we forget we have power. And what these strikes have shown and what they've proven time and again, strikes work. Solidarity works. When people come together and communities come together, good things can happen. When organized labor takes on organized money, organized labor wins. And I've said it a million times, they may have all the money, but we have out-procreated them. There are more of us. And if we stop allowing ourselves to be divided, if we stop allowing ourselves to be pitted against each other, we got a chance. We got a chance. I want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back.
This is the talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. In the nation's capital...
Let Gaza live!
Capitol Police trying to keep 150 protesters back outside the Democratic National Committee, saying they're making arrests. Protesters demanding a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. Multiple officials say negotiations are progressing toward a U.S. and Qatar-brokered hostage deal between Israel and Hamas. President Biden and China's president meeting for several hours behind closed doors in California. Among agreements they made, reestablishing military communications.
That's been cut off, and it's been very worrisome. That's how accidents happen, misunderstandings. So we're back to direct, open, clear, direct communication.
President Biden also says they agreed to combat illegal fentanyl. Federal prosecutors say two men are in custody and facing charges for what they call the largest ever seizure of counterfeit goods in U.S. history. This is ABC News.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wiggehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Governor Evers is lifting lockdowns at state prisons in Waupun and Green Bay. Inmates have been confined to their cells for months because of safety worries and not enough guards. Inmates will soon get access to more prison programs, and some inmates in Waupun will be moved out. The governor says he's also keen on hiring more guards. Starting pay for those jobs went up to $33 an hour in the new state budget. More young people are taking part in Wisconsin's registered apprenticeship program than ever before. The paid training program combines on-the-job learning and education from technical colleges and private training centers. More than 16,000 apprentices are taking part. That's the highest number in the program's 112 years. Workforce development officials say the program is a way to bring job seekers and employers together. I'm Nate Wiggehout, Civic Media News.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast. Mainly clear sky tonight with lows around 34. Southerly winds, 5 to 10 miles an hour. Daytime highs approaching 64. Tomorrow, a blend of clouds and sun. Overcast skies tomorrow night. Chance for scattered showers, 37. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 37.
Timeout.
All right. Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
It's never personal, only politics. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show with Dom and Crute.
Weekdays from 4 until 6.
On your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. From the home of the frozen tundra, Green Bay's choice for news talk, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Joe Manchin says he'll do anything to help his country. And I guess it means that he's considering running for president. Because he believes that's going to... Somehow, someone has convinced him. I don't know who would possibly be able to do that. But he thinks this is going to help the country. Yeah. Evidently, he thinks that there's a lot of moderates out there who are just looking for someone to throw their vote behind. Interesting, interesting times. Here to share some thoughts on, well, could we have a President Manchin? And isn't he an old guy, too? But here's this answer some of those questions. Our good friend, former Ohio congressman and political analyst, Bob Ney. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So what do you think? Joe Manchin running for president. What do you think?
Well, he'd be a spoiler. Now, he said in one of the articles with the AP article, he said that Donald Trump would destroy the U.S. democracy if he won a second term. That's what he said. But I think if Manchin ran, he would not be helpful, you know, to Biden. So if that's his real theory about Trump, then I don't know how him running would do that. And I read some polling where RFK had, I don't know, it was something like 20-some percent of the vote. I'm not a little skeptical of that, obviously. But RFK or Manchin could be spoilers. RFK could hurt Trump, and Manchin, I think, could hurt, with some voters, could hurt Biden. So they're not going to win, but they could be potential spoilers in a very close race between Biden and Trump.
No, and you see this Dean Phillips guy from Minnesota, you know, saying he'll spend any amount of money to do this. Cause, and his rationale was, you know, he goes back to Carter and Teddy Kennedy running against Carter, saying, well, you know, I know he's going to lose, so I'm giving people an alternative. And I'm going, I don't know if that's helpful.
Well, they're not alternatives as much as they're spoilers. Also, some of these of the polling on the spoilers, whether it's, you know, the congressman from Minnesota or Manchin or RFK Jr., some of those pollings are off because of the fact, you know, people will respond at this point in time. And there's still general frustration with Trump and Biden both by majority of Americans, period. They might say something now, but when they get in the booth, they start to think, a lot of people start to think, well, I'm throwing my vote away. And as much as I don't want Trump or Biden, I've got to potentially vote for one of them. So that happens too. So some of the numbers are sort of a false high right now on a third option. Again, the vast majority of people in America, if asked Trump or Biden, they would say neither.
Right. But your only two options ultimately are going to be, you know, A or B.
Or you vote for Kennedy or, you know, Manchin if he would run. And again, that becomes a spoiler vote. Now, if you had, you know, sort of the perfect candidate that would jump in there, third party, was well-financed, and, you know, was a really, really good candidate, you might be talking something different this time in modern history, where somebody might be able to take 33% of the vote and won. Of course, the Electoral College would be one big nightmare, wouldn't it?
Now, what would you do in that case?
I'm sitting here wondering about the Electoral College. You know, how would you figure that one out?
Yeah, I mean, that becomes one. Now, would it be, if I'm going, you know, back to my high school civics class, you know, you elect the electors to go and cast their vote, and they're not bound to vote for who, in most of the cases, I don't believe they're bound to vote for who they were elected for. So they could, is it possible they could change and come up with, I don't know.
Well, you know, you need a majority of the 270 votes to elect a president. And in a lot of, you know, the states, they're not legally bound, you know, to support, and some of them they are. I mean, it just depends. You can't even predict it because it's a bizarre combination. If there were actually three people in the race that were equally divided.
Yeah, but wouldn't you end up with whoever had the most electoral
yes.
votes, though? I mean, you wouldn't have to get to 270 if three
right.
if three people, because 270 is the magic number to get
right.
you over the total number.
Right.
but it could be, it would be over who had the most votes, whoever took California and, you know, maybe a couple other states.
Right. Because if you took, you know, 200, you need 270 to become president. You need the majority, I mean, of 270. So, yes, somebody, if there's a strong three-way race, somebody would take X amount of votes, and you're now taking 270, and you've got to get to, what, 91, technically, or something? If you get three of them? If they were very, you know, all three very equal?
Well, no, the 270, isn't that, that's one more than the, what is it, 430? They're 435, right?
Well, you need to win. Now I'm okay. You need a majority of 270 electoral votes, is what you would need.
You need to get 270.
Yes, you need the majority. Yes, I'm saying it kind of wrong. The Electoral College would have 538.
Right.
Electors. So you need a, I'm saying that wrong, majority of the 270 electoral votes is required. So yes, you've got to get to that because you have 538 electors.
But if you had three people running, you wouldn't need to get to 270 if the electors were split. You would just need a majority, right?
Correct, yes. You have 538. You've got to get to 270 to elect the president. So you would have to have a majority of 270 to win. If you've got three people...
That's in a two-way race, but in a three-way race,
right?
You wouldn't need to get to 270. You would just need the majority, right?
Correct. Yes.
Which is not 270. I mean, you know, it could be, you know, 200 for one, 200 for one, 138 for the other.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Right.
Yeah. So we could... Would that be a good thing? To have a president elected with, you know, a third of the vote, which means two-thirds of the people didn't want him?
Well, under our system, it's a tough question to answer. Is it a good thing? Probably not. But under our system, we also always tend to say, is it a good thing that somebody lost or lost the popular vote by X amount of millions, but became the president because of Electoral College. So we're right back to that argument too.
No, good
just
point.
In bigger numbers.
Yeah. How can you lose an election by 7 million votes and still win?
Exactly. And it's because we have an Electoral College, which goes back to the whole debate of the Electoral College, why it was created, because of small states, on and on and on, you know. Yeah. And then with three people, it intensifies that argument, I think. So, yes, to answer your question, it would be a tough sale because this time the bigger majority of the country doesn't want, even through the Electoral College system, technically. So, yes, it would be tough.
Yeah, I mean, but a lot of
There's
weird
spoilers.
Things going on. A lot of weird things. I mean, I'm looking at the McCarthy dust up yesterday. And you've got, you know, Ken Buck, the Republican from Colorado, who has jumped in, siding with Tim Burchett, you know, saying that Kevin McCarthy and lying are like peanut butter and jelly. And I'm going, you know, it kind of reminds me of Forrest Gump. Me and Jenna, we're together like peas and carrots. Yeah, it's just one of those, seriously, is this the best we've got? Is this the best we've got, Bob?
Well, also, here's another thing that kind of gets me about Burchett. Congressman from Tennessee who got, quote, elbowed in the kidney. Now, I read in the article, it was outside room HC5. I am extremely familiar with HC5. Any member of Congress that served there is familiar with HC5 on a Republican side in particular. You come out of the doors of HC5, there's a set of small steps. It's a crowded area. And when you go out of there, you go out in a herd. It is very, very possible that, of course, it should be on camera somewhere, but it's very possible that McCarthy went out of there and went by him. Couple of things. if he got, you know, the big kidney punch that he, Burchett, that he thought he got, did he go down to the House physician's office? By the way, little open secret, I love to tell him on your show, there is a House physician's office. It's run by the Navy. The Admiral's the head of it, and members can go down there and get x-rays and see physicians, you know, anytime they're in the Capitol. So did he go down because it was such a severe, you know, McCarthy gave him such a severe kidney hit? Now, on top of all of this, the question I have is this. If he was hitting the kidney, all right, why is Matt Gaetz filing the ethics charge on McCarthy? Burchett has to have his guy, you know, Gaetz has to file the charge. If you were, if you and I were Burchett and we got kidney punched, we'd have stopped, you know, grabbed the back of the coat.
Yeah.
Of McCarthy and said, hey, buddy, come here for a second. That's what would have happened. But why would you not go to, if you were Burchett, to Gaetz and say, hey, I'm the one who got kidney punched. I'll file the ethics charge.
Yeah, I don't need you fighting my battles for me.
Right. What's this all about? You know, Matt Gaetz wants to, because Matt Gaetz has got his own ethics charges, obviously, you know. And I'm going to go back to Justin Trudeau. I watched the tape many, many times this week. Justin Trudeau did elbow a female member of Parliament of Canada. And I'm convinced Justin Trudeau had, and he's not on the top of my favorite list, by the way, but I'm convinced he did not know he elbowed her. I'm convinced. I watched the tape over and over and over. You know, I wasn't there. Nobody's seen a camera thing on this, but it just doesn't add up when you start to have Matt Gaetz going to file the ethics charge for Burchett. Is Burchett incapable of actually doing that? You know, is he you know, somebody that's incapable of filing an ethics charge?
Yeah.
It just doesn't add up, the whole thing. Drama. Drama.
It's just crazy where we are. Also, another Republican legislator from Louisiana, a guy named Clay Higgins, evidently he claimed during a House hearing that the FBI has something called ghost buses. Have you heard of ghost buses before? Because the FBI director said he didn't know what a ghost bus was.
I've seen the movie.
No, that's Ghostbusters.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant Ghostbusters.
No. Ghost buses. Well, they're evidently secret purpose buses for nefarious mm-hmm. stuff. Completely hush hush.
They're paranormal vehicles. paranormal. That's kind of amazing that we think the FBI is so capable that they actually can have paranormal buses now.
Yeah.
Why do they say? Where do they come up with this?
See, this is the thing that I love when I talk to you, because I agree with you. There is so much that the right believes our government is capable of, and mm-hmm. that we're just not that organized.
No, the government is not capable of these sophisticated things. They just aren't. You can go back into the whole history of the intel agencies and go back in their history, and you see what huge mistakes, you know, they have made. I mean, they can't even call it correctly. So to think that they're capable of actually doing some of these things is absolutely amazing. It's the latest form of political entertainment. That's what it is.
Yeah, I got to get your thought on immigration. Evidently, Greg Abbott is going to sign a bill allowing him in Texas to deport migrants. So we're gonna throw. I guess we're gonna have the papers please law back, where if you don't have your papers, they're gonna deport people from the country. Is that in the purview of a governor and state law?
Well, it's not going to be able to be held constitutional.
Are you sure?
The Texas House approved the bill, which would make it a state misdemeanor, is what they're doing, to cross into Texas. So that would allow Texas law enforcement to arrest the undocumented immigrants And then that law, what they're saying, would require the state judge to order the person to go to Mexico in lieu of prosecution. So they're saying, you're going to be charged with a misdemeanor. You can go to Mexico. We won't charge you. But if the person doesn't go to Mexico, then they're charged with the misdemeanor. And so they'll go through a court process, but I don't think they can be deported. And I'll tell you why. And this is a case that baffled me. But in Ross County, Ohio, Chillicothe, Ohio, when I was a congressman for Ross County, I got a phone call from the union. And they said, hey, 20 illegals have crossed our picket line. And they said the sheriff's letting them go. I called the sheriff. And he said, unfortunately, you know, I am. I've arrested them. I called immigration. So I called immigration the next day. And I'm like, what are you doing? And the guy that answered, Bush administration, his name was Gutierrez. And he said, yes, if they have not committed a felony crime, I'm saying let them go. So I went through that, you know. I didn't like it, crossing the union picket line, you know,
yeah.
Et cetera. But the local sheriff who arrested them couldn't hold the charge because the Fed said no. Now, sometimes the Fed says deport them. It's the mood of the Fed, you know, of the executive. You know how it runs. And that's why we need a comprehensive bill instead of presidents deciding one month this and the next month that.
No, you're right.
So I just don't see, I'm not a constitutional scholar, but the way they're, now it's very interesting how they crafted this law, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's all up to you. You could either go to jail
or
it's like in the old days when, you know, like, well, because my uncle's generation, they're about, you know, 15, 20 years older than me. He's like, you know, you could either go to jail or join the military. This is kind of that.
Right. Now, Mexico says it rejects the Texas proposal. So then now you've got another whole, you know, complex piece of the puzzle. Now, if they can find other crimes of the person coming in, then they could make that, you know, maybe go to a felony, which would be a different case. But, yeah, the way this is running, you would say, I don't want to go back. So, okay, how long is the jail sentence? You know, it's a misdemeanor. Okay, put me in for, you know, 30 days, give me some meals, and yeah, I'll be on my way.
Three hots in the cot, yeah.
Yeah, so I just see this as more of a publicity piece for the governor than anything else, really. It's not enforceable federally.
We'll see what comes out of it. But, Bob, as always, I appreciate the thoughts. Good stuff, as always.
Thank you.
Our good friend Bob Ney. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1881. That was the day that trade unionists held the founding convention of the Federation of Trades and Labor Unions in Pittsburgh. This group later changed its name to the American Federation of Labor. During the 1880s, it grew to replace the Knights of Labor as the most powerful labor union organization in the United States. The Federation of Trades and Labor Unions, and later the American Federation of Labor, were dedicated to the principles of craft unionism. Unions were organized by crafts, so workers with different jobs at the same workplace would belong to different unions. The Federation of Trades and Labor Unions focused on gaining collective bargaining rights, and with it, better wages, benefits, and working conditions for its members. The creation of this federation marked a turning point in workers' struggles to improve their working conditions. However, not all workers or labor leaders were supportive of the idea of craft unionism. For example, Eugene V. Debs started the American Railway Union because he did not think the specific craft railway unions were an effective way to build worker solidarity in the industry. He wanted a union of all railroad workers, as opposed to unions divided by job description. Nevertheless, the Federation of Trades and Labor Unions and the American Federation of Labor showed that workers could band together. By doing so, they could fight for a better standard of living and a better future for themselves and their families. The Federation of Trades and Labor Unions proclaimed that their goal was to organize a systematic agitation to propagate trades unions' principles, to elevate trades unionism, and to obtain for the working classes that respect for their rights and that reward for their services to which they are justly entitled. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com. So, not so good news. Evidently, our trust in science as a country is falling. A new poll out by the Pew folks shows that 57% of Americans say science has had a mostly positive effect on society. That's down 8 percentage points from November of 2021 and 16 points down before the start of the pandemic. That's a problem. That's a problem when you have people who don't believe in science. And I actually met a flat earther, which I thought was just incredible, because they truly believe the earth's flat. And I'm going, did we not figure? Never mind. Also, looks like Truth Social is in trouble. It's facing, quote, substantial doubt about the future. It's been burning through tens of millions of dollars in operating costs, according to a new filing. And I've been saying for a while, it's been propped up by right-wing money, I think, just to give Trump a platform that everyone reports on. And I've been always saying, just ignore what he says. Nobody's on Truth Social. Nobody. Well, there are a couple of cranks and crazy people. But if you don't report on it, it's that whole thing about the bear in the woods. look, nobody knows. It doesn't happen. And finally, I got a lot of responses to the Mark Wayne Mullen thing. And Mark Wayne, it was on Fox, and he said that he was representing, nobly representing the good folks of Oklahoma with what he called Oklahoma values. When he challenged the Teamster president to a fight there, he said, quote, "What did people want me to do? If I didn't do that, people in Oklahoma would be pretty upset at me." I don't think so. I don't think people in Oklahoma would care about your petty little squabble. I think what they should care about are all the things that Sean O'Brien and Sean Fain and our friend Sarah Nelson, what they were talking about, how to make your constituents, how to make their lives better. I mean, that to me, kind of an important thing, not some petty 12-year-old clown show from a U.S. senator. I mean, this is the thing that gets me. This guy is a sitting U.S. senator. The Senate is supposed to be the upper chamber. I get it in the House. I get it if you walk by somebody with an elbow them in the kidney, okay, I get that. But the Senate is supposed to be where the adults are. Children are in the House, the rages of the people, all that stuff. But the Senate, you're supposed to be above that. I think Bernie Sanders, tried to get him to think like that, but no. He was representing Oklahoma values. Yeah. Now, here's the thing. If I were advising him, and the way things used to work, is you go about it like this, because O'Brien did put out a tweet, anytime tough guy or anytime cowboy, I think is what it was. If you're advising Mullen, and if I were, what I would have said is, look, you're a professional MMA fighter. This is so below you. You're a sitting U.S. senator. This is so below you. Grow up. That should have been the line. But no, we've got to go to the child route, which again is another reason why a lot of the people who are representing us shouldn't be, and he's one of them. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next
time. You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark.
We're fortunate that our daughters have a need to grow and learn.
Always streaming
that
on the Civic
case
Media
for
app.
13-